Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Woo! As usual, all of the typical disclaimers apply.
Yep.
We swear, we blaspheme, we're terrible people.
But still Catholic.
We're Catholic, you don't have to be, and we're glad you're here, and we are about to assault your ears with foul-mouthed church drunkiness.
You have been warned.
Welcome to the party.
And welcomed.
I'm Guess, here with my co-host, Dizzy Diggs.
Hey, hey.
What are you drinking?
I am drinking a delightful concoction that's like a flu remedy of ginger liqueur, orange bitters, a little rum, and some lemon sparkling water.
Oh, a little bit of lemon lacroche.
Mm. He can't resist that. How about you? You've got a nice little
I'm on a bitter bender.
A bitter bender.
I got some bitters for Christmas, and I've been kind of working my way through them. So I just laid down, you know, a nice little base layer of Maker's Mark, which I may or may not be a little too familiar with how that tastes normally, thus giving me the perfect platform to explore the bitters that I have been gifted.
Wow.
So I went with chocolate bitters in a little bit of bourbon this time.
And how is it?
It's quite tasty, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of
surprising.
It mellows
twist.
The rough edges on the bourbon and gives it a little bit more richness. It's quite tasty.
We are
quite tasty.
Fancy tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully
we're fancy every night.
Yeah, that's true. Everybody pour a glass and get ready because tonight we're going in for a deep dive.
Deep dive.
Dangerous territory.
On hot button issues.
Mm-hmm.
Given that we are recording this in the aftermath, the afterglow.
The afterbirth.
The afterbirth. I knew you were going to say that as soon as I said aftermath.
You
like,
didn't.
Literally as soon as I said aftermath, I was like, oh fuck, this is going to say afterbirth.
I thought you were going to go for it.
Of the March for Life.
Here, here, Lahayim.
And tomorrow, this is the eve of the second annual, apparently. Women's March.
Yep.
So, 'tis the season to be marchy. And the March for Life is something that, you know, it comes up every year. And given that we are both people who kind of have roles as professionals and volunteers and whatnot working with Catholic youth, I'm sure you have probably had many folks approach you, as have approached me, to be like, you guys should really consider taking a group to the March for Life.
Or hosting a mini one.
Hosting a mini March for Life. Yeah, all these things. And it's always kind of a topic where I'm like, I don't feel out of my depth being like supportive of people who want to go and participate in that, because there are plenty of people who go with a very clear mind and clear heart with a good message that life is sacred and needs to be preserved.
Yeah. So if you don't know, the March for Life is an annual march to march for the unborn and for like the Catholic teaching of human dignity of the human person for everybody from conception on.
Makes it sound lovely. What it also is a little bit of like an anti-abortion shit show.
Yeah, it becomes,
which is kind of not where I want to be like bringing groups, you know? So it's like, I can tell you about the details. I can support you, you know, with theological perspectives and all these different things, but I'm not going to load up a van full of kids and take them to it because I feel like I'd be putting them in too charged of an environment.
Yeah, and it's something that you hesitate maybe doing in that capacity. And, like, I don't know. I've always been kind of interested in that so many people of a wide range, like, participate in it. Like, it's kind of an interesting event where it's, like, you know, what we would say, like, kind of middle of the road people of faith will go. And, like, you know, and then there's, like, the very extreme end of of the traditionalist or the, like, you know, the one issue groups. And so, like you said, it's nothing objectionable necessarily, but like we're going to talk about this later, but this idea of like politicizing something that's faith-based, I think just makes me a little hesitant. Although I know, like you said, lots of sane people.
Totally. There are
participate
a lot of
in the right way, and we want
the right
people
intentions
to participate in this kind of thing.
It's just an
like
environment
any march, like
where
you
all
should
of a sudden you will have people who are on the same side of an issue who will, you know, be holding up signs or going down the street or leading a cheer that's like, oh, life is sacred. And it's like, yeah, you bet your ass it is.
Right.
And then they'll be like, abortion is murder. And you're like, whoa, that got weird fast. You know, like it just all of a sudden it goes from something that you can get behind. And I think it is about the rhetoric that has come up around this issue where you have pro-life versus pro-choice.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a large portion of the population that says, can we not support both life and choice?
Yeah, and, you know, as, like, you know, as a woman, and, like, with the Women's March being right after, you know, there's, like, this whole thing about, like, feminists need to feel like they have choice in this choice as well. Like, right. You know, can you be a feminist and be pro-life?
Right, exactly.
Like, sometimes they're not welcomed feeling.
No, because then you're anti-choice.
Right.
If you're pro-life, you hate choice.
Right, and that's not true.
But if you're pro-choice, you hate life.
Right, even though you're living life.
Right, yeah.
It's really... I feel like these are complex issues that just get pigeonholed into these simple answers.
Yes.
And that is... not a satisfying take for anybody who wants to be right.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's hard for us to accept complexity. It's hard for us to, like, accompany people where they are because we want things to be this or that. And that doesn't work for a lot of people, like myself included, I feel. Totally.
Well, and I feel like you touched on it earlier just a couple minutes ago, like saying that, you know, that this issue has become so politicized and that kind of, like, it tears me up. And I know that, you know, like being on the liberal end, understatement of the year, of the Catholic spectrum, but being on that liberal side of things from a Catholic perspective, you end up sort of torn apart because being Catholic suddenly has become equated with being very, like, politically conservative
or even hateful to people who believe differently than you, perhaps. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like the church is there to be a guiding light, you know, like, and it's to inform our decisions and to give us a community to celebrate with. And I, you know, like, certainly am not always in line with what the church says and what the church does. But when I'm like, you know, like, I think we were talking about earlier, I wish I lived in a world where abortion could be legal, but we had all of the services there so that it really was not something that people would choose unless it was a real need, you know? Well, like, there's certainly situations where it's a medical need, things like that, you know? Sure. But, like, I would love to live in a world where people felt empowered and emboldened and could say, no, you know what? This happened, and I'm going to figure out how to make it work because I have that support.
And I think people who are not religious, a lot of people feel exactly that way.
Yeah.
I wish it was not necessary. Like, I don't – I think a lot of people feel like it's – an undesirable thing to happen, you know, and they don't want that, but they don't feel comfortable with having it illegal. Like, I think that's not a religious perspective. I think that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it comes down to, as well, you know, this politicizing of it causes us to fall away from the actual morality of it.
Right.
So I think for people of faith, it would actually be much more effective if it were not a if we did not allow it to become politicized.
Yes.
This particular today's march, like, I was really disheartened, and not just because of my general distaste for our current president, but I don't think this should be a political thing. I think it devalues the faithful aspect and the church aspect and the morality aspect to have it politicized, especially when our political system is so fraught and polarizing and not a Christian or there's no charity
one
in politics.
Thing that the church should be steering clear of as, like, a model or an arena that they want to enter, it's politics.
Yeah.
Like, they should stay the fuck away because that's a mess right now.
And going back to your earlier point of, like, you know, a lot of people do want a world where abortion would be, like, the least likely option for somebody. And we know from facts and history and evidence that if we have social supports in place, it drops, and we've seen it drop, and it's when there is sex education and when there are better supports for early child care and for women's health, less people make that choice.
Yeah.
And we also know that making it illegal does not reduce the amount of them. It actually just causes more women to die because they do that in back alleys.
Pushed to the fringes.
You know, so if it's a life issue and you care about life, then you've got to support it in this holistic way.
Right, right.
Care about mothers and care about babies beyond the birth canal.
And you do see that movement in some spheres in the church. In fact, I was working at a church once, and I rolled up to work, and there was a big sign that they had put out front of the church building that said, "Are you pregnant?" It was like a little mini billboard that they had put up outside, and then underneath, "Estás embarazada." Like, and then it was like this program that they had that was trying to provide help and support.
Yeah.
But it made me so mad because I was like, are you kidding me? Like, nobody's going to look at that and think, oh, wow, how great that they're providing, like, help and support. They're going to drive by and they're going to see in giant letters, "Are you pregnant?" And they're going to be like, abortion.
It's my body.
They're just going to get upset because the issue has been politicized and because the church as a whole, has not shied away from that rhetoric. Like, they have not necessarily backed off of it. And
I think there are groups that are, like, quietly doing that good work and being there for people.
Absolutely.
And having a positive impact, but that's not what gets publicity because it's not sensational.
Yeah.
And people aren't marching being like, we accept you and we'll help you either way. Like, that's nobody's sign.
Yeah, nobody wants. Yeah, and I think that's kind of the general environment that we're in right now is that people are desperate for a middle ground where some collaboration could happen, whether it's in the political sphere or whether it's just kind of culturally or socially or in the church. And yet the loudest people always come from one side of the aisle or the other. There's nobody marching going, hey, let's all get along. You know?
Right. It's like, all life is sacred, whether you agree with me or not.
Right. You know, it's just like you can't really find that space because there's so much loudness on all these other topics. And the part that's disheartening to me the most is when the rhetoric that I most associated with this really kind of really nasty issue that abortion has become, but it bleeds into all these other spheres, and now there's this culture of death term that gets thrown around in church spheres where it's like, well, we have a culture of I always associated most with the death squads. I'm like, oh fuck, here goes the church again talking about the death squads. Oh Christ. But then it's like, there are angels and there are demons. Which side are you on? There is good and there is evil. Which side are you on?
Yes.
There is the culture of life.
The devil is at work.
And there is the culture of death.
As if God wasn't.
Right. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, have we not already fought that battle, or somebody fought it for us and won? Like, didn't life already win? You know, like, can we not move past that?
I mean, we're still called to participate and to care about it.
Yeah.
But if your caring looks like harsh criticism and hard-drawn lines, who are you helping? Like, you're just making yourself feel better. And,
right.
And that's not really a virtue.
No.
It turns out that is not a gospel value.
It is not.
And I actually always feel a little bit torn about this, too, because I would consider myself a feminist and somebody who also really does actually like the church's teaching on life. Like, I actually love, if I were in a little vacuum and reading the teachings about the sanctity of human life and the dignity of each person, I'm like, yes, 100%. And I actually do believe in that from conception until natural death. And I think that encompasses things like healthcare. It encompasses things like medical care, which is the same as healthcare, sorry. But like the death penalty stuff and the dignity of how we treat people who are incarcerated and children and the elderly. Like, all of that to me is very valuable. And I love that the church does have that stand. I wish, like many people who fall where we do in the spectrum of liberals to conservatives, which I don't even like that language a whole lot, but wherever you fall in that, like, I think a lot of people wish we were talking about more of those things. Like, I think people are surprised if they're not familiar with church teaching that, like, we're against the death penalty. And, right? Like, that's church teaching. You're not supposed to, and yet you can say, well, it's not the same because babies are innocent. Well, then that's not all life to you.
Right.
And you're not seeing everybody as God sees them. And once again, like, you're not being that virtuous.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to care about the unborn babies. Also care about,
Give the church credit in that, you know, like, there is this, you know, preservation of life, the sanctity of life, the dignity of life. And it is consistent, you know, across all of the church teachings. You know, I think they just kind of fall into these pitfalls of letting the issues that become hot topics at the time, you know, and right now abortion and the way that the church views, treats, accepts homosexuals,
right?
The LGBT community, like, they haven't figured that out yet, and they haven't figured out a rhetoric that doesn't make them sound like assholes.
100%. If we were showing that kind of charity and kindness to truly all people, that would do more for the church's stance on morality in the public perception than any campaign or march.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
So as we were kind of getting ready for this, I did a little digging because I got fascinated by this culture of death, you know,
and
the culture of life was something that the church wants to promote across all fronts. And I give them credit for being consistent with that, because there are people out there who are, you know, pro-life, but also pro-death penalty, and they don't understand that you can't be both. You know?
And they don't think it's a problem that they are.
Right.
And, you know, we're the assholes for bringing it up, but...
So, and part of that is because the church has continued to kind of, like, while they're like, abortion is wrong every single time, doesn't matter what the circumstances are, the track record has been the death penalty is almost always wrong. They do still have a little caveat, you know, and but it's like if you can like you're protecting society, and the true teaching is if you can protect society without taking a life, then that is the road you have to take. Right. So they're leaving the door open to some sort of, I don't know, like Hitler, like you have to kill Hitler. I don't know. You know, like, I mean, but anyway, that's where it comes from, where it's like there's that little bit of open window. But the term culture of death, which has been so just, you know, hijacked, I think, comes from John Paul II in his encyclical Evangelium Vitae. Mm. Boom! Latin again.
What?
I think that's like maybe the third time
we've dropped a Latin on church. I thought you were just speaking in tongues again.
No, it happens. It happens. So, the Gospel of Life. Right? Okay. So, yes. John Paul II writes this encyclical about wanting to address the gospel to the culture in a way that will help people live life more fully. And so he's kind of talking about moral relativism a little bit. Indulge me for just a moment to actually quote encyclical text.
I bet nobody thought that on Church Drunk you would hear an actual John Paul II quote.
Yeah. So it was 1995, the Gospel of Life says, you know, we're confronted with moral relativism, et cetera, et cetera. We're confronted with an even larger reality, which can be described as a veritable structure of sin. This reality is characterized by the emergence of a culture which denies solidarity and in many cases takes the form of a veritable culture of death.
Dun, dun, dun.
First of all, the double use of veritable is redundant. This culture is actively fostered by powerful cultural, economic, and political currents which encourage an idea of society that is excessively concerned with efficiency. Looking at the situation from this point of view, it's possible to speak a certain sense of war of the powerful against the weak. A life which would require greater acceptance, love, and care is considered useless or held to be an intolerable burden and therefore is rejected in one way or another.
Yeah.
The usage of that term to say that it's the powerful versus the weak, it's a throwaway culture issue, which is the same terminology that Pope Francis has used, and to have that be hijacked and politicized so much and turned into, and again, I think at this point it's an overreach for John Paul II to take that philosophy and just say, and here's every single thing that it applies to, like it's every facet of life, because he could have just left it at that and said, we have this social problem where we've grown so accustomed to inequality that sin has become commonplace, which it has. It's part of the human condition. And we could just say, let's address that, you know? Let's fix that.
At a societal level, which will then impact more people, right? Then, we have that ability.
People will be able to make informed decisions about where the line is for them on some of these issues where there's a big spectrum of different beliefs.
And individual cases. Yeah. Like, it leaves room for that as well. And like you said, this is something Pope Francis has talked about a lot in terms of economic justice as well as political justice, because it does come down to the strong and the weak, and the poor always suffer first and more. And we're seeing that happen in the world as the poor grow poorer. And I think the church is actually very progressive when it comes to its, you know, teachings on work and society and your political life. And yet all we're known for is this march about the unborn, which
where we hold on.
I don't
to...
mean to seem like I don't care about that, but it's just such a bigger thing. Like you're saying, the social sin, structural sin.
This idea that there is, like, when he used the term culture of death, I don't know if he ever could have seen it becoming so singularly placed on, like, reproductive issues, you know, like
the Jesus camp with all the little dead, you know, bits.
Exactly. You know, and it's just, it seems like, you know, and that the response to that, you know, like I used to get little updates from these little groups, you know, like very well-meaning church groups, but the language that they use, you know, like we're starting a letter writing campaign to stop the death penalty. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, here's an idea for your youth group. Have all the kids sit down and write a story as if they were a guardian angel assigned to somebody who's about to be executed. And I'm like, whoa.
That got dark fast.
Like, I mean, you know.
And like, also, like, why?
Right.
I don't know. I've never got, I feel like I have much less interesting mail than you. And I'm a little bit jealous, but not 100%.
You worked at a few different parishes than the ones I was working at.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've always worked at very mainstream places. No, but, you know, there's the culture of death versus the culture of life, right. Which is a false dichotomy.
Totally.
Because life and death are part of the same thing.
Right. And which that's one of the core church teachings.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that, like, brings it to, like, you know, so we talked a little bit about abortion and, you know, death penalty, but, yeah. You know, more modern ones with euthanasia.
Right.
And even, like, kind of, like, eugenic stuff as people are getting the ability to screen for...
Right.
You know, during pregnancy for different things, like there's this kind of fear that people are going to start picking and choosing. And the church does actually have beautiful teachings about like the value of life, whether that person, whatever level that person can contribute to life. And I actually really like that. I believe in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that, you know, the church teachings on, you know, reproduction and being sort of that quote unquote, like open to life thing, you know,
yeah.
Like, are you open to God's plan for life, you know,
yeah.
Which touches on contraception and touches on abortion and eventually touches on, you know, like, I mean, the whole gay marriage thing gets wrapped up in that
yeah.
Because, you know, like if you can't procreate, then you are essentially useless in the eyes of the church from a matrimonial perspective, because they still hold on to this belief that marriage is this medieval Catholic-making machine, you know? Like, let's make more Catholics.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's the
marriages.
Only purpose, but there's definitely the
why would they still kind of hold on to that mentality if
yeah.
that wasn't somewhere in that attitude?
Oh, sure, it's embedded.
Yeah, and then eventually, you know, like, you move further down the line in life, and it touches on euthanasia. Are you open
yeah.
to God's plan for when life ends, you know,
yeah.
and like all the capital punishment, like it all kind of gets wrapped up in this. And I do think that in the end, you want to be on the side of the culture of life, but it's not that.
Yeah.
Easy.
I mean,
it's
I get frustrated when it's politicized and
yeah.
it's voting for laws that don't even have the intended effect. Like that part to me is frustrating.
Right.
I would rather see us marching for like better support for all women,
right.
or like,
right.
like, why aren't we campaigning for bills that are like free daycare for people under a certain income level? Like, if you want more babies, you need to make it easier for those babies.
The idea is that, you know, life has an inherent dignity, you
yeah.
know, and therefore that's why we want to protect it.
Sure.
Because that, but like, let's ensure that dignity is reflected in life,
yeah.
throughout life, you know, and that,
right.
and that there's not. That what the heart of that culture of death comment was in the original encyclical, which was putting people into a world where there is an inherent disparity in the dignity
yeah.
of the life that they're going
exactly.
to lead. Even though there is a dignity that we carry within us, given to us by God, there's not a social reflection of that dignity.
Right. Right. And even if you're going to suffer, and we all are, part of your Christian duty is to help alleviate the suffering of others.
Totally.
And not just to be like, well, you're here. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Get to work.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So.
I don't know. I mean, like going back to, so 95.
Yes.
JP2,
mm-hmm.
culture of death, culture of life. You go further back than that. And one of my favorite little fun facts that you know, you've heard probably a few times. Is that in 1968, when Pope Paul VI kind of affirmed the church teaching on contraception, saying,
yeah.
like, this is something that is not allowed in the Catholic Church, he had a whole advisory council of bishops and cardinals that had been for 2 years investigating it and analyzing it from a theological perspective and talking to the scientists that
yeah.
were behind it and trying to figure out, does this actually represent
right.
some sort of threat to the faith and the Catholic way of life? The recommendation was, no, it does not. This is okay. That you can,
yeah.
that there is something that is still embedded in God's plan to be using contraception in a responsible
yeah.
way within a loving relationship. And Pope Paul VI just went, no.
Sounds like this might get out of control.
Yeah,
well,
not gonna do that.
And another fun, a little trivia fact that, you know, the pill, the birth control
mm-hmm.
pill, was developed by a Catholic doctor who was trying to actually
right.
help women get pregnant. He thought, well,
if we
stop ovulation for a little bit, then maybe when it comes back on, it'll be
yeah.
reset, or, you know, you'll drop eggs appropriately. I don't know what happens. But that was actually, you know, kind
yeah.
of a funny twist that would then become this big thing that now your Catholic healthcare company won't pay
yeah.
For your contraception.
Which is, it's just bananas. Like, it's crazy to me that people can have a good head on their shoulders, as so many Catholic people do,
yeah.
and that one person's decision could have such an influence. Because as soon as you say no to contraception, again, like, it changes the meaning and the definition and the purpose of marriage for a lot of people's perception of what a Catholic marriage is. You know, like, well, if you have to be able to be open to God's plan of procreation, then contraception is bad and everything else around that is just not allowed.
Oh, well, you can do natural family planning because then there's such a rate for error.
Right. You can do natural family planning, which I guess as I was doing a little bit of digging on that, like, drove people nuts at the time. Like, the cardinals were like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, the pill is not okay, but you can encourage people to do natural family planning.
Like abstain charts and all that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I feel like it's only fair to point out that this is kind of an intellectual conversation for people who are like us, right? Mm-hmm. Northern Americans who are of, like, middle to middle upper class. Like, they're okay.
Right.
You know who this really had a horrific effect on our people?
People in developing countries. Yep.
Who are told, like, you are going to hell. And then you have people who make no money at all, who are living in squalor, continuing to have many children under fear of hellfire.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me there's not a sinfulness in that, a structural sin within the church that we're causing this problem.
No, telling the church.
For one woman who suffers.
Right. Like, telling the church to fuck off is definitely, like, a first world privilege.
Sure. This is an intellectual exercise. I'm going to take my pill anyway. Right.
You know, like I'm still going to call myself Catholic, even though I'm not going to follow. Like, cafeteria Catholic is much less of an option when you're in a developing country. And that Catholic church that is, you know, helping to feed the community really is, like, a lifeline. You feel much more indebted to that church, and you feel like you really need to follow those teachings much more closely. And when those teachings are part of what's making you poor, the family of the food for a family of four when you have a family of 12 is not really cutting it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's a problem.
It's a sinful issue there. So
speaking of needing to maybe, you know, speak out against the church a little bit, I did have one more little tidbit.
Okay.
From a book called Faith That Dares to Speak, one of my very favorites by Donald Cousins. If you haven't read this book out there and you are a person who has issues with the church, go get it. Go read it. It predominantly is talking about faith that dares to speak, you know, on behalf of the laity to a clergy that is not always listening. And it's written by a priest.
Okay.
Who, not surprisingly, teaches at a Jesuit university. But,
hey, what are you saying?
Just saying. So, faith that dares to speak to a church that doesn't always listen, and then also the faith that is courageous enough to listen. So it's kind of written from both sides of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But this is just something that I thought was so, so dead on. Talking about how would we arrive at a point where people are afraid that they're somehow not being Catholic enough by making decisions that they think are the right decisions for them.
Okay.
So, how could we explain the use of fear that fostered, if not created, what has come to be known of quote unquote Catholic guilt? Only immature and misguided faith would embrace such tactics. And it's like, holy moly. Like, this is a guy who is not afraid to speak out about the fact that a church that tries to just kind of keep people in their place and tell them what to do. And rather than saying, you know, Jesus said we all should love each other no matter what, they're saying, you're loved a little bit more if you follow the rules the right way and if you pass the right laws and if you do these things. And that's just a really unfortunate reality of the church, I think.
Well, and unfortunately, it hasn't been above the church to prey upon that fear, especially in developing places, right? It takes a few decades, hundreds of years for a culture to get to a certain point. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, which way American Catholicism goes. You know, if you look at European Catholicism, it's just dropped off quite a bit.
It's not going anymore.
You know, as modernization inevitably happens, and I don't think modernization is the enemy. The church is old and she can recover, and we will see certain fluctuations.
It's only
going to
get more complicated. Like, there's not going to be some backward step where all of these issues of how does morality and technology fit together, and how does morality guide us towards, you know, legislation that will help people to flourish? It's only going to get more complicated. The church can't continue to bang a medieval drum in the midst of all that.
Well, it doesn't work because we don't have to, right? And people get to that point like, no, like, I'm going to do what I want, or I'm going to think what I think. And you want them to come around to immorality, and you want them to, quote unquote, you know, get to heaven. But beating them with a stick doesn't really count either. Doesn't count. Yep. So I have to come to the defense of our dear Jesuits, because you sort of threw them under the bus that that Donald Cousins is at a Jesuit university. But I'm not sure if you were aware.
Like, I love the guy. I know. He's a hero.
But the Jesuits did actually issue today or yesterday a revised statement on abortion on the eve of the March of Life. So they wanted to come out. They haven't done one since 2003. Gotcha. And I'm not sure what maybe prompted this particular revisiting of it. Maybe they just, I don't know why.
15 years, I'm not time even to speculate. Go again. Yeah.
Yeah, but they do call, you know, it a key social evil in the United States. But they do make a point to emphasize that complexity, that the most fundamental building block of a just social order is respect for human life.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they go on to talk about it's not easy either direction.
Yeah.
Just to villainize people or to say it's easy to just not get an abortion and not to accompany women in their in their situation. So, you know, they are nuanced as they always are, but I just wanted to say they did actually make a point to say something about it.
Yeah. Well, the Jesuits recently are rarely quiet.
Yeah, and I think they are
rarely quiet.
Yeah, but I think it is an important thing to mention, and they do sort of tie it into that whole eugenics thing that like we are kind of entering this time period where people are disposable, and maybe not just in literal abortions, but in other ways that we view them.
Yeah.
You know, as like, oh well, let's put them away, whether that's getting rid of them before they're born, or saying that they're of no value in society, whatever it is, that's all disrespect for life.
Yeah. I mean, I think it does all go hand in hand with the throwaway culture the question is, how do you make responsible decisions for yourself, and how do you find the headspace to just like silence the world that's constantly yelling at you to figure out what is your decision
going to be? How do we in society support people in making the best decisions having the options to make better decisions?
Well, I think that can probably put a close. I mean, lots of questions, not a lot of answers. But
that's why it's hard issues with hard alcohol.
Hit us up with a tweet or an email about what do you march for?
Yeah.
March for life?
Do you like the march for life? Is it cool?
March for choice? March for, I don't even know what else you could be.
Any
on
other
the side of.
Yeah. Pro-life feminists in the audience? Yeah.
So at Church Drunk Pod, tweet at us or email us, churchdrunk@gmail.com. We will be back next week with the last podcast, the last official podcast of season 3. We'll be putting a little lid on it for a little while. Okay. So that'll be nice. And
Church Drunk.
Church Drunk. Pro-life.
Pro-choice.
Pro-choice. As long as it's not prohibition,
amen.
We're in good shape. Cheers.
Peace.